welcome to another edition of GT Radio. I hope you're all doing well tonight. I'm very excited, very, very excited. I have two amazing women on the show. They are leaders in the industry. They are examples of great leadership, and I'm glad to have them on the show. Welcome, Suzanne and Colleen. How are you tonight?
Hey, Tino.
Hi. Great tonight. How are you?
Good, good, good. So you're both incredible people at the top of your game. Tell us a little bit how you both have achieved this type of success. What are the ingredients?
Suzanne, you want it first?
Yeah, sure. I really think I had a good number of people help me along the way. So bosses or mentors, friends or associates. I think some helped me with opportunities, some with candid feedback. I think there's, you know, always those people who believe in you and give you encouragement. I think a lot of it is learning things from colleagues. And I think along the way, conflict and some people who really challenge you to be better. I think at some point I finally realized, you know, the degree to which you can be open for help and be willing to learn from other people, and be willing to take a step back or sideways or forward if you need to in your career. I think those are things that really sort of changed my direction and created the journey that led me to where I am today. So I think when I think about that, I really think less about what I've done and more about what other people inspired me to do.
Good. Colleen?
Yeah, and so much like Suzanne, I too have incredible people that have given me advice and kind of helped me think about my career. And so I started as a front desk agent at Caesars Palace 20 plus years ago while I was a student at UNLV, and I am so blessed and grateful for a mentor that I have, who at the time was the VP of the hotel there, George Markantonis. And so listening to some advice, you know, I didn't really understand in, you know, 10 years' time that I would be in focusing on the revenue management discipline. I actually spent my first 9 years in that building doing operational roles, so housekeeping and reservations, and then back to the front office in a larger capacity. But those were movements around the hotel that were very much suggested and guided by somebody who I very much trusted. And so, again, just having people in your space that kind of help you frame up an opportunity. Certainly, I had to prove myself in each one of those areas, and then because of that, then there becomes kind of the next opportunity, and those presented themselves because of the hard work and demonstrating the ability in each of those stops along the way.
Do you guys think personality has a lot to do with it? Is our business attract a certain type of personality, and to get to the top, you even need another gear? Is that the right kind of idea?
Well, there's all kinds of personalities in our industry. I don't know what you're referring to at the moment. Suzanne, I don't know. It's funny, when I first met Suzanne in 2005, as Caesars and Harrah's came together to form one company, I felt a real bond with her immediately, just because we are strong, independent women. I didn't know it at the time, but I soon would be a single mother, and she too was in that position. So, you know, strong-minded women who are willing to take new things on and not be nervous or intimidated, I think that's the gear you need, or it's the gear we have.
Yeah, I don't think it's for the faint of heart.
Right. It's a 24-hour business, go, go, go. Always something going on. What are the things that women need to know about working in an industry that is predominantly male?
Well, I think both women and men, and I don't think that it's just predominantly male. I think, you know, we need to acknowledge, which it's interesting to me that a lot of companies still don't, that we need to acknowledge that, you know, this is a business, like many businesses, that are predominantly run by white males. And, you know, that's you go from the boards of these companies to the boardrooms of properties to senior leadership and directors. And it is predominantly white male. And I, you know, when I look back at this, I think, you know, did that lack of diversity sort of impact the business, you know, how it is today? Because you've got this homogenous viewpoint of how these properties and businesses evolved and were run. And I think, you know, that lack of diversity, the lack of willingness to embrace it, be it women or minorities or age or different viewpoints, I do think that that has been a deterrent to our business thinking progressively. And I would, you know, the way I have tried to think about it now is if you don't want to do it because you think it's the right thing, then maybe you do it because it's good for business. Because, you know, I have found when you can kind of create these teams where you have these varieties of viewpoints, you know, male, female, age, gender, you know, background, that we have better outcomes. You know, we think differently, we challenge each other, and we have, you know, more variety in our viewpoints. So, you know, I just would hope that people acknowledge it and that, you know, we don't treat it as if it's not something that each of our businesses do. They do. So, you know, the emphasis should be on how do we do it differently.
Yeah, diversity is important. Colleen?
You know, so kind of back the original question, kind of what do women need to know about this industry? I think all too often, unfortunately, women are asked to prove themselves before the promotion comes along, that promotion with a greater title and additional salary. And sometimes that is very different for males in our business. Or the industry, you know, here's the promotion, and now you have new responsibility. And so, I would encourage women to challenge that and know their worth, and not be okay in a time period of having to prove before you get what you deserve to taking on additional responsibility, earning a wage that is commensurate with your duties performed.
Right. You're saying there's different standards.
I've seen it, surely.
Yeah, there's different standards. What do you think some of the solutions are? What needs to happen?
Well, I think you need strong women that aren't afraid to not help the next generation know that, and then how to, you know, craft the art of negotiation. They didn't teach a class at UNLV for it, and maybe I'll go to the dean and suggest that I teach one, although I don't know that I'm perfect. But I really believe that women need a voice, and we need to take a stand in that fashion.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, and I actually am thinking about situations where I have sat with female colleagues, and we've actually sort of written out what is the scenario, right, of how they need to be able to say, you know, I've been offered a job elsewhere, but I might want to stay, but, you know, here's, you know, you need to promote me. And, you know, it is not an innate skill for women to be able to speak candidly and, you know, help define their self-worth. And it's often an uncomfortable conversation if you're having that with a superior. So it is, I think, a more difficult, unnatural feeling conversation oftentimes when women do that. And I think how to do it and do it effectively is an art.
Yes, it definitely is. And I think that that, like you said, Colleen, there's no course taught about that, right? There's no way you can learn something like that.
Yeah, so I don't know how traditionally men do it better, but we're coming for you, men.
If you both had to start over again, what are some of the things you would do differently?
I think Colleen just expressed that really well, and I second her thought on that, is that, you know, we're often really uncomfortable being our own champions. I think I would have been more expressive, if that's possible, and been less passive in the process of my career. I think that I often let companies define, you know, what was my next role or what was best for me, and that I was a fairly, in hindsight, passive participant in that process. Today, I think I might have said, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's very similar to what I've done before, you know, how do we think about this opportunity differently? I think that I would have, I'm not sure that the outcomes would have been any different, but I think I would have felt differently. Honestly, there was probably a point in my time in my life where I didn't even think, gosh, I need to take control of this. You sort of let the company, you know, guide your experience, and I do not think I would do that again today.
Right, right.
I echo everything that Suzanne just said. There were a couple moves that happened in my career where I took the package that was presented, and you know, it was okay. It was more than I was making in my last job. It didn't mean that there still wasn't opportunity to negotiate. The word Suzanne used is passive. That too. I think just. Another thing that I would have done differently in hindsight, I don't know that it really would have changed the path that I went on, but, you know, when I was finishing school at UNLV, I remember having a conversation with somebody about the gaming side of our business, and I said, I don't really want to focus on gaming because at some point I'm not going to live in Las Vegas and then that skill won't be transferable. This was, again, nearly 20 years ago when gaming wasn't as prevalent as it is elsewhere in the country. So I in hindsight, I might have put a stop of in a gaming operation type role on my resume.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a process. There has always been a disconnect between marketing and operations, and we know this because there's so many different departments too. What are the issues here, and how do we improve this relationship?
Colleen and I work together, both marketing and operations, and I think, you know, that was a great example of us coming together. I think of it this way, and yes, oftentimes there are challenges where operations thinks marketing's not doing enough, or and marketing thinks that operations isn't, you know, pulling their weight. But I really think the whole basic is aligning your goals, and that's one of the things that Colleen and I did when we worked together, is we really aligned our goals up front, and so the expectations were really clear. You know, we would constantly ask, who's the primary audience for this? Who are we talking to? What are we trying to achieve? What do we want the customer to do? You know, what are the KPIs? How are we measuring this? So I think when you've got that alignment up front, rarely do you just see that disconnect, you know. I think we had some solid success on the basis of, you know, making this very clear. Every project we did every day, we talked about goals.
Yeah, one of the major goals tends to be, how can we make more money, right? And so I need Suzanne's help to do that as a marketer. Today I work with a guy named Tom who's great and a good partner as well. And I've really been fortunate to have strong marketing people as partners. But if we are not talking and talking on a really consistent basis, there could be times when marketing is going out and doing an initiative that either is a futile exercise because guess what, we don't have the need, And then we're driving people to our website, or we're telling them about an offer that really when they get there isn't going to be available. And then on the flip side, there could be periods of time where we absolutely need some help to stimulate demand, and that's when coming together and understanding what the goals are and then working together to achieve that.
Yeah, there's got to be a synergy. Everything works a lot better if when you're marketing something, the operations part of it goes smoothly. How do you develop a marketing strategy around your brand? What are those conversations like?
Well, I think the Cosmo has a really admirable brand. I know Colleen was part of that whole team that, you know, worked so hard to establish it. And
it's Cosmopolitan, Suzanne. Cosmopolitan. Yeah. Not the Cosmo. I don't
Sorry.
Know.
I abbreviate. That's your brand standard.
Yeah.
But you guys did really, I think, come up with a great filter where you really process things through that and spent the time and the money up front. I think, you know, when I think about sort of defining your brand and creating a voice, you know, research I think is very important. To think about what the white space is, you know, what do we own, what do customers think about your brand, what are the gaps between what you want to be and what customers see you at. This is really hard work, particularly for places, you know, like Foxwoods where, you know, you have 27 years of legacy, you know, and a lot of transformation in creating new things. You know, so we're in that whole process of updating and making it. I think the things that I think about are always important is to be authentic in your strategy. You know, customers are pretty savvy to say if you're saying something about your brand that's not true. So to be honest. And I think oftentimes in gaming, particularly for properties that are, you know, more gaming-centric, which is a lot of the properties across the U.S., it's really hard. The brands tend to be very transactional and not very emotional. They tend to look a lot alike because the experience of gaming is a lot alike. So I think the hard work people can do is to really try to drill down more to talk about, well, what are the specific sort of, you know, whys, not just the whats, but the whys to why should people choose you. And that, you know, that's the sort of the hard work of coming up with that brand strategy.
And Colleen, you guys have done such a great job and have such a powerful brand. How did that all come about, and what are some of those conversations like that you guys used to have?
I remember the conversation, you know, 10 years ago as we were preparing to come to market and, you know, really trying to understand what already existed here. At that time, Las Vegas had 150,000 hotel rooms already, so 3,000 more coming online in 2010 when things were still pretty hard was kind of the last thing this city needed. But we knew we were going to open, and we needed to open with something that had an offer that wasn't in town, a spirit of a property that made you feel a little bit different than our next door neighbors. And so, delivering an independent, spirited hotel that wasn't themed and is very accessible, a little bit cheeky from, you know, time to time, flirty, if you will, but not overtly tacky or in your face. And so, you know, we did that through design elements in the building. We did that through the choices that we made with the food and beverage outlets that are in the building, you know, new to market chefs. We have a great affinity toward art and the way that that shows up through the property. But really every decision that is made still to this day about the Cosmopolitan, is this who we are? Is it true to who we said we were 10 years ago? And, you know, I'm happy to say that in most cases, it absolutely is. We are still very fresh. Just 3 weeks ago, had an opening of a new venue on property that is just as cool as things that were part of our property when we opened 10 years ago.
Wow, it's amazing. Good stuff.
What a great filter, like you described, Colleen, right? It's, you know, it's really the every decision has to get put through that brand filter.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have a bunch of, you know, crazy shit happen. Oh, sorry. You know, can't say that.
That's okay.
You beat that out, or what happens there?
Yeah, I think we're live, but we'll bleep it out on the tape. It's okay.
Okay.
I think you'll be fine. Tell us what it takes to stay ahead of your competitors. You're both in very competitive marketplaces. What does it take?
Boy, I'll say. I think that it's we have to stay really interested in refreshing everything and staying relevant. You know, customers want variety, games, new games. They have an expectation that things be, you know, all things being equal, you know, you really have to continue to try to find that variety of experiences for them. And I think one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about is to really try to stay focused on customer experiences, to understand them, and then really try to improve them and not walk away from reinvestment in both the property and people, and really just keep trying to refresh that customer experience.
Colleen?
Yeah, and so I'd say, so today, our industry is in a different space than it was 10 years ago. So not only are we concerned about our competition, but now there is such prevalence of gaming throughout the country that, you know, they too are competitors to properties here in Las Vegas. So giving people a reason to continue to make 3 or 4 trips a year back to your property. Obviously, we don't have the luxury of opening something every quarter. But delivering an experience that is very consistent from the gaming standpoint, you know, having a casino marketing team that is, you know, with really top-notch hosts who have great relationships with their customers, obviously that is incredibly competitive. And so wanting to make sure that our customers are well taken care of here and that we anticipate their needs and help them understand about some of those things that are, whether they're, you know, entertainment opportunities that are upcoming, you know, giving people a reason to make a trip to us versus a competitor.
Mm-hmm. There are times in business and in your personal life where we have setbacks. How do you cope with that?
You drink a lot. Although I go on the wagon pretty frequently. I'll go like 2 months without drinking and then it just all falls apart. So I am slightly joking, but only partially joking. I think for me, when things kind of hit the rails, having peers, whether they're people that you'd call friends or just somebody in the building that you can trust, that you can talk through those situations. And there are plenty of times where I call somebody and I know that it's a safe space. There's going to be no judgment. And at some point, I just need to talk through. I mean, my mom is one of those people for me, and she doesn't know a lot about what I do at work every day. And so sometimes she'll ask just a really simple, basic question, and it just makes it all kind of okay. Like it just evens it all out, and it's pretty calming for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a trick.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, I think a network of these supportive friends and colleagues is really how we all get through the bad days. I think another thing when I think about it that's been helpful to me, both probably learned it more personally and tried to apply it more professionally, is to sort of let go of the notion that I have to fix everything and that I can fix everything and that, you know, the goal is that things will be perfect. So your kids will be perfect and work will be perfect and your home will be perfect. And I think that oftentimes women, particularly in business, tend to be women, we're, you know, we are people who like to fix things and we like a challenge. So, but I think it's, you know, drive yourself a little crazy that way. So to really be able to separate things and say, here's the things I can control and change, and here's the things that I can't, and to, you know, let those go. You know, as the saying is, you know, strength to fix what you can and let go of what you can't. So I think that has been a really good process for me that I unfortunately probably didn't learn until I was older, but and wiser, but helpful in figuring out how to cope.
Yeah, it's pick yourself back up and get back into it. How important is work-life balance, and how do you maintain it?
So it's required, and I can tell you that early in my career, I didn't maintain it. And there are many things that I wish I could get back, you know, leave work for an hour and go to the concert recital. I missed plenty of those because I had a big job and I felt that I could be judged for being the mom that had to pull away for a bit. I won't ever be that again. My kids are a little bit older, but they still have things that they need me at or want me at, and I want to be there. And so it's required, and I think working and surrounding yourselves with a supportive team and then having a leader that, you know, knows that your work is going to get done at the end of the day, but, you know, isn't going to give you a hard time for needing to start your day with your kids.
Yeah,
or go to the beach with girlfriends when you need a mental health week.
Yeah. I think that's
yes.
really interesting. I had a colleague point out one time that, you know, one big difference is that men oftentimes won't say, gosh, I need to leave now because I need to go see my kids, you know, recital. They'll just schedule it and leave. And, you know,
right.
Women, you know, we really apologize and explain and try to compensate for having to do those things. So to Colleen's point, I think she has really mastered saying there's no apologies for this. This is part of what I do, and you know, this is a decision I'm making and how I use my time. I hate to warn Colleen that when her kids are out and in college, she may work more again.
Yeah, right.
Suzanne, you ruined my night.
Might swing back.
Sorry, but it
might
is.
Might swing back.
Yeah, I certainly have, but I also find that's kind of freeing as well, right? Because a lot of what we do at our business is really fun, cool work, right? So I'm not going to complain too much having to, you know, be present at entertainment and, you know, make sure I'm there with events and they're
all
fun,
the fine stuff that you have access to. Yeah, it's amazing.
And but yes, I think finding that balance is important. And I think another thing that Colleen, I know, does really well and I have aspired to is to make sure that we carve out some time for others as well. And, you know, I had a number of years where I would be on the boards of animal shelters, but also make sure that every Friday night, you know, I was a volunteer, you know, hands-on volunteer. And, for many, many years, or, you know, fostered animals. Currently, we do a project where we'd like to do it more frequently. We're about once a month now where we're working with a food pantry. So I think, again, those are the kind of things that even though, you know, it sounds like you're doing something in the interest of others, those are things that really help recharge you. You know, by making sure that you're staying connected and engaged in your community.
Yeah. which leads us into the next question. What do you both love about our business?
I love that no 2 days are really ever the same. I mean, I typically look at my calendar before I leave my house in the morning, and I think I know what today looks like. And, you know, some days the calendar keeps its form, and other days, you know, an audible is called, and I'm down in the lobby helping a crowd on a big, heavy check-in day. And so I love the scale of our business. 3,000-room hotels are not prevalent in many other parts of the country. And so I can't imagine not getting to work in this type of environment.
Yeah,
it's fun business.
You know, it's the pace, you know, sometimes a bit exhausting, but I think it's hard to break away from once you sort of experience that pace. You know, I think the breadth of things that we get to work on, you know, oftentimes in marketing, you're a channel manager or you have one product. And, you know, especially in some of these large companies and large resorts, you're working on development projects. You know, you're marketing resort, hotel, you know, food and beverage. You're doing loyalty programs. You're doing service programs. So, you know, just the scope is really interesting and often hard to replicate, I think, in other businesses, which makes it just, you know, so much more interesting.
Yeah, it's a fun business, to say the least. Well, this has been fantastic. Should we take some calls? A lot of calls here.
Sure.
See what we got going. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Colleen or Suzanne or both?
It's Heidi speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can. How are you?
Awesome. How are you? How are you, ladies? You've been entertaining me, and I have to keep looking at your LinkedIn profile to see whether is Colleen the marketing girl or is she the revenue lady? Because I have never had anybody on this program curse and admit to drinking before.
Oh.
Normally, if they do, they don't come from revenue optimization. They come from marketing. But anyway, awesome. I love your authenticity. So I recently presented at NIGA, and my topic was, how can we elevate with ELLE, the woman in gaming brand? And I'm interested to know from both Suzanne and Colleen, how do you think we could go about doing that?
Hey, Heidi.
Are you there?
Yes. Is the question for the Women in Gaming organization or just Women in Gaming in general?
Oh, Women in Gaming in general. I don't belong to an organization. I'm a speaker.
Gotcha.
So I spoke about my topic was, how can we elevate the woman in gaming brand? Because as you so said, you know, it's prevalently, it's men up at the top.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. And I mentioned the organization because I sit on some of the committees of AGA has a subgroup here, you know, for women in gaming. And
mm-hmm.
part of what we have done with that organization is to really focus on a couple elements. One is educational, an educational series that takes place in different parts of the country. And women can apply, and there's different levels of it, but it basically explores leadership. And some of those soft skills that Colleen spoke about, you know, we all lack oftentimes coming into the business. They'll really explore a lot of those, so more effective communication strategies, you know, exploring what their personal leadership style is, and it's often taught by senior women in the business. So I think that educational element is key, and the problem is it's not very accessible, right, because we only do it in a
right.
few places across the country. So for companies to think, it has to be embraced more by different gaming organizations and companies to actually offer that skill set to their own leaders and emerging leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Those are important. I think the education is critical. I think the networking opportunities are also very important. They have also done a LinkedIn circle.
Right.
I think is very interesting, but I also think there has to be some way to sort of try to institutionalize it past that because it's sort of restrictive.
Right.
How Colleen and I know each other is because there isn't many women in gaming, and let me tell you something. We all know each other. We network on a regular basis, and how to pass that along and further that, you know, that's something that I've remained very committed to in every organization I've been in.
Right.
How do we move that along?
Suzanne, did you want to answer that question? Because I also had another one for you, if I may, Tina.
Oh, that's
absolutely.
Colleen.
Colleen. I would say, so I agree with everything Suzanne mentioned, and one of the things that is really easy for me to do in Las Vegas, because we've got the hotel college at UNLV in our backyard, so to speak, is being involved and I'm a graduate from the program, and so going back to classes there and sharing my career story and whether, you know, those were kind of the path of how I got to where I was, knowing that I sat there and in their same classroom. Actually, I can't say that anymore because they have a beautiful new hotel college building. But you know, going back to campus and letting, you know, not specifically, it's not an all-female classroom, right? But I am very partial to seeking out strong women who are considering a career in gaming and hospitality and doing what I can to encourage them that is an area that is, it's been an amazing career for me and it could be for them too. And in creating relationships there, I'm part of the mentor program that exists through the university. And over the past couple of years, I've had some of the most remarkable young women who I am so proud to be associated with. I learn from them. They tell me they learn from me. I hope that's true. But it's very much a two-way street.
Right. And then I wanted to ask you as well, in terms of moving up the ladder with both of you, is what have you seen that you can say, maybe we can just say one, of the top mistakes that women make wanting to get to the executive table, and how would you avoid it?
A mistake would be not being true to yourself and changing anything about your style because that was your goal, right? So I think being very genuine and having strong partnerships in your operation, and at the end of the day, just being a good person and working hard has the potential to get you where you need to go. There no games involved. It doesn't have to be politics. You really can get there with good old-fashioned hard work and being kind and a good partner.
I think Colleen touched on this earlier too, but I think part of it is to know when to ask. I think that again, that's not a skill we're often taught, but to really lay out for bosses what your expectation is. Like, here's my goal and here's my ultimate goal, and how, ask for help. How do you see, you know, what is a path I can take to get there? I think when you have the courage to sort of lay it out there, you're sort of including folks, and it's not a mystery. You know, they don't have to guess that that's your path. And I think, to what we spoke about earlier, it's to not let someone else be defining what your path is. You know, state very clearly what you think your path is.
And
keep telling it to everybody you meet. I mean, it not needs to not just be your boss, but, you know, other people who you think can help further you in that effort. Have them.
I love that.
Give you really solid honest, sometimes it will be painful feedback to say,
right.
How do I get to that goal? Tell me what you see that I need to do.
I love that. I have a saying that goes, if you don't get a seat at the table, just bring a folding chair. One last one, Tina. If I can ask you.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
If there is one thing that you would attribute your success to, what would that one thing be?
I assume that that's a question for us ladies and not Tino.
Oh, yeah. I know Tino's success trait. He's a fabulous networker.
I was waiting for Tino to share. So I would say my willingness to rotate in some positions that really gave me the structure and the understanding of this business. And so kind of diversifying my skill set is what I think had a lot to do with where I am today.
I love that.
Yeah, I think tenacity, certainly, in this business. I know, I first started in the business right out of college. I remember applying at HR, and they threw away my resume.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, fill out this application. I desperately wanted, it was in the hotel, and I desperately wanted to get into marketing. And I probably applied for 6 positions before I got into marketing. So, it could have easily said, yeah, maybe this is the sign I need to stay in the hotel and not get into marketing. But,
right.
You know, to just sort of, keep at.
You persevered.
Keep at it. Yep.
Wonderful. Thank you. You both wonderful, and keep doing what you're doing, Colleen and Suzanne, and we will chat soon. Thank you, Tino. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Heidi. Have a good evening. Great questions. Those great questions. Really, really good questions. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Colleen or Suzanne?
Yes, Tino. Thank you. As always, great show. Ladies, I can honestly tell you, as the father of a smart 12-year-old daughter, I hope she will encounter strong female leaders as yourselves and encourage you to keep up the great work, because sooner or later, she will enter this crazy hotel casino world, and people like you, ladies like you, are really great examples for young ladies. So with that said, it is appreciated, especially from a daddy, too. Because you have all those boys out there. One thing I've always told female employees of mine over the years, whether it's right or wrong, but there are different standards applied to women versus men, and they have to understand their on and off clock actions will be judged differently from men. We've all been in the business long enough to see that one guy wearing the lampshade at the Christmas party, and everybody thinks it's hysterical. But if it's a female wearing the lampshade, she's judged differently. And if the men are talking about their children at work versus the women talking about their children at work, I don't know. Sometimes I think they look at differently. Would you agree with that, or do you think I'm nuts?
I totally agree with it, but I think here's the position that I always feel like is we're telling our girls the expectation, but we're not telling our boys, right, to stop helping create that expectation. So,
I understand.
And I feel like I did that with my girls too, right? Like I said to my girls, this is what people are going to do. And, it hit a point where they were a certain age where, it really occurred to me, it needs to be really important to say to them, but that's not your fault, right? Because it happens to you, you can expect that it may happen to you, but how you behave with that, if somebody thinks what you're wearing is suggestive, and you don't feel it is, that's That's not your fault. That's their perception. It doesn't make them behave a particular way. They behave that way because they behave that way. So I think that, you know, that's, you have to be honest with your kids about what they're going to expect, you know, as they go into the business world. But I think the great news is that many of us are raising a generation of kids who may look at this differently, right? Like, may actually say, but you can change that, right? Like, how you deal with that and, you know, how you treat each other can be a different experience.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And in keeping, you talked about the freshness of customer experiences, so that you're crazy, and I think you used the word crazy stuff, is what I heard. You described it. And so you don't have to drink a lot of bottled water, those type of things. How do you best capture feedback from your current clientele? You talked, you touched on casino hosts, your past clientele, you always want to come back, and then the future clientele, from whether it's a branding perspective or a past customer experience. What type of interactions, surveys, things like that would you recommend, or do you currently do or utilize that you find effective?
Well, so here we certainly have the traditional surveys that go out. One of the places that we exchange with customers a lot is on the social media platforms. And so whether those are, you know, on an Instagram actual public post or through DMs or on our Facebook, but really understanding what our customers are telling us. We use a lot of user-generated content, and we know the areas around the property that are the most kind of Instagram spots, and so we turn around and use that content, and any person who's active in the social space loves when that happens. And so that's kind of our, it's a medium that we engage with, and it really is successful. I think for us, another thing that we spend a lot of time on when we get our survey scores back, rather than looking at, you know, the grade across the board, the score that most of us look at most closely is the intent to recommend. So are we leaving people with a feeling that they tell their friends about, and then they become advocates for our building? I think that's probably one of the strongest measures of performance.
It's very interesting. Do you break out the survey results by demographics, male, female, gamblers, non-gamblers, that type of stuff, or keep it more broad-based?
It can be done. It can be sliced that way. I don't. It's not something that I don't slice it that way. I understand where our scores are and what the teams who are front-facing work on, and they do a great job of that. We can dive down as deep as we need to, but sometimes you get into some small number issues, and for a data person, I try to help our team remember that we've got to have the right sample size to call it, you know, a trend.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all your input and thoughts and advice. And thank you very much to both you ladies.
Good luck to you and your 12-year-old. I have a 13-year-old, and I need all the luck I can get.
Oh, Lord, they're crazy, aren't they?
Oh, my gosh.
Have a good night. Thank you for calling in. Yeah, they can be hard to deal with sometimes. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Colleen and Suzanne on the phone. Do you have a question for them?
Hi, Suzanne and Colleen. This is Luigi from Every. How are you guys?
Hey, Luigi. How are you?
It's very, very good. Thank you. It's a very good conversation tonight from a women's perspective. I'm really enjoying it very much. So I also like your properties in a very unique way from my perspective. I mean, we work with so many casinos around the country and the world, like over 1,000 of them. And by far, you guys have a really great operations. And I visited them many times. I just want to compliment you both. You're doing a great job. So,
thank you.
I do have, you're welcome. I do have a question for Suzanne first. And I'd like you both to answer. I have two questions, but they're pretty easy, but when you think about your life, and you've been talking about your careers and balancing your life and your work, you're obviously you know, it's a demanding and challenging day, every hour on the day. I know that. But you have to learn the art of the deal, the art of the delegation, staying, you know, connected to your family during the time you're working at the office. I mean, I work with a lot of women as well, and, you know, most of our office happens to be, in my area, is more women. So I'm very observant of these things, and I've come to appreciate it more. You also have to draw a line between home and work, and you guys have talked about that. How do you carve out the time, Suzanne, for you, for yourself? And then what do you do for your peace and quiet, for even if it's an hour out of your life in a month? I'm just curious.
I'm such the wrong person to ask that right now, but
I don't know. If it's
well, you guys are going on vacation, right?
It's 9:21 p.m. on the East Coast right now, and I am on the bus.
You're on a TV, a radio
yeah.
show, exactly.
thank you, Suzanne. We appreciate it. We really appreciate it.
I will tell you that. I have a couple passions, and one is I've worked with rescues and things. So I, while I'm not actively doing that right now, I have the byproduct of having, you know, a small farm worth of rejected animals from other people. So that's crazy time consuming, and deal with that when I'm not here. And I think, you know, as we talked about before, you know, while it sounds generous to do things for charity and other things, I find that that's really a great recharge. So to the degree that I can make sure that I get someplace and do something for somebody else, I think that really makes me feel like I'm, you know, back engaged with something that is more important necessarily than casino revenue. I feel so lucky because I love this. I love the pace. You know, I'm at a great time in my life where my kids are in college and, you know, I have the freedom. And as you said, you know, we're, Kelly and I are both at resorts that have so much to do and, you know, so many exciting things going on that I really can't complain. I like being here.
How often are you able to enjoy that peace in your life, the equilibrium?
Sometime after 8 p.m.
Okay. All right, I was just curious.
Not tonight, though.
Friday
not tonight.
Sunday.
Not tonight. Tonight will be after 10:30. Yeah, 10:30, 11. Yeah, just a moment.
And what about Colleen?
Luigi, did you have enough? Yeah, Colleen, go ahead.
So, unlike Suzanne, I've got my purse in my hand, and when we get done in 5 minutes, I'm going to dinner. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding. I am. That is serious. I try to,
good.
You know, so what I do is I just spend time with friends, and if I'm alone, I find that watching super brainless TV is one of the things that puts me at most ease because I can literally turn off the thinking for the day and just
nice.
Laugh at ridiculousness.
It's always great to unplug, right,
Colleen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Law
and then
order.
I try to get on an airplane once a month and put my eyes on something new.
Okay,
yeah,
and
this
is a really easy question, but you might have to search and maybe you know it off the top of your head and it might be real simple and quick. But out of all the women that you know in our business, who is like 1, 2, and 3 or number one on your list that you admire for leadership and overall accomplishments, et cetera, who would that be?
Yeah. I was going to say Suzanne Trout.
Okay, Colleen.
Well, there you go.
Suzanne.
Yeah, easy answer. Thanks,
Louise. So seriously, I'm getting curious as to who's your, like, a mentor, a woman mentor, in your life, career?
I was really, she's long retired, but I was very fortunate. I had a woman early in my career, Pam Popolarski, who was the director of marketing at the Tropicana way back when and moved up moved up to be the general manager of that property for many years.
Wow.
And she started as assistant to the president at opening and moved her way up to be the GM. And she was really who I think took the troops along, right, on her career journey is to, you know, identify young people and really, you know, oftentimes I think back and think, why would somebody give me that job, right? And so young, and I'm not sure I really knew what I was doing, but, you know, they appreciate, I think, your energy and your spirit, and she was a great mentor for that. And then, gosh, just been, you know, a whole lot of people that either worked directly with or admired. Virginia McDowell came out of that same camp, who went on to be the CEO of Isla Capri.
That's a great one. Yep.
Yeah, there was lots of women who came out of that that property. Mary Tyndall is the VP of marketing for resorts that was there. Sherry Amos is a CMO for a food chain. You know, just, again, I think a lot of really positive experiences. Eileen Duffin is VP of marketing out west. So it was great to work with this group of very young women, you know, where we all got to support each other and see each other. And really, we've been happily rooting for each other's career success for 30 years. So it's very nice.
Very good. Thank you for that. Colleen, did you have any?
I have a couple. My first female boss at Caesars Palace is a woman named Tia Rhodes, and she's a beautiful African-American woman, and she started from a frontline position in that building. By the time I reported to her, I was taking over as the reservations manager, and she was elevated into an assistant vice president position. And she was somebody that just demonstrated this kind of work hard and just be a good person, and the rest will follow. I haven't been in touch with her for many years. I think about her quite often, and I really do owe it to her to try to find her and let her know that she certainly mattered to my career. And then I, in all seriousness, my time working with Suzanne and some really other strong women at Harrah's. But our opening CEO here at the Cosmopolitan is a woman named Lisa Marchese, who has become a good friend of mine as well. I think I learned. I learned so much through the marketing lens as we were opening the Cosmopolitan, you know, the choices that we made and the conversations that we had. And they were, you know, every choice was so purposeful and had a meaning and a story behind it. That was an experience that I am so glad that I was able to be on that pre-opening team and learn from her.
Very nice. Very big influences in your life. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. Continued success to both of you. Love your work, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Luigi.
Luigi. Have a good night.
You're welcome.
Oh, no problem. You have a good night, Luigi. Bye-bye. Well, that was fantastic. A lot of great questions and a lot of great answers, and I thank both of you for being on the show. It's been incredible. You've both been on the show separately, now together, and every time it's an incredible show, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Tino. Thank you, Colleen.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice night.
And have a good trip.
We will. Don't you worry. We'll send you a picture.
Great. We'll see you guys later. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Well, it was fantastic. Colleen and Suzanne are really, really something else. Great people. Monday, we have another duo, Carter Pavey, who's the GM at Gun Lake Casino, and Lauren Westerfield, who's the VP of Marketing at the Palms. And they both worked together at stations for about 10 years back in the day. And you'll hear a lot of stories about them collaborating and rising up through the ranks and just having a great time. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good evening, and we'll see you on Monday.